My dad, as I was growing up, was very, very big on the Kennedy assassination. And I used to hear all these theories, even then, back in the 70s and 80s growing up. And it's such a strong subject. And, you know, the old adage, where were you when Kennedy was shot? This, that, the other. Then I see this email that comes through from myself and all this research. CIA Operation 40. This is completely new to me. All I've really from the Kennedy is, you see on YouTube, Jackie O shot Kennedy. It was a driver who shot Kennedy. Degrassi Knoll, the usual suspects. So, from the beginning, my friend, just take us from it where this started, because this is fascinating.
Well, it started for me in the early 1980s, I think.
Okay.
It was the first time I saw the Zapruder film. The Zapruder film is a film taken by one of the bystanders, an elderly man who was just standing up near the grassy knoll,
yeah,
to the right of the motorcade when it came. And he filmed the whole assassination from the first shots was fired all the way until the motorcade disappeared. And also he got some very good shots at the very brutal headshot, the final one that just smashed Kennedy's head in. It's an awful shot.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, what it shows very clearly is that the final shot came from the right front, because his head is thrown backwards and to the left, instead of what the official story says was that the lone assassin, the guy, the patsy they pointed out, Lee Harvey Oswald, was sitting behind and up on the sixth floor in the Texas book to school book, school book story. And so right away, when I saw that, that was way before the JFK movie and all of these things. But that really sort of caught my interest, because I thought, oh my God, the story we're being fed from official sources are totally not true. So that took me on a long, long road where I started, I think I read at least 100, maybe 200 books about the JFK assassination. I got almost obsessed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more I read, the more confused I got, because it's such a complex conspiracy, such multi-layered. It's like I heard someone say once that it's like an enigma inside a labyrinth, inside a safety box where somebody threw away the key and dropped it in the sea. It really is tricky. And that is also why it's still not totally solved after all these years of people really digging into it.
Sorry, Ollie, would it not be easier then, after what you're saying there, like you said, it's multi-layered, there's so many different facets, would it not be easy then to just accept the official version instead of us finding all these different routes? Do you see what I mean? Are we looking too hard? Is it that simple? Or, as you find out there with this CIA 40, then
it would be a lot more simple to just accept the official version. That's what 99.9% mm-hmm. of the population does, but it's just not true. And the reason why it's important is not because somebody got shot in 1963, it's because the people who killed him are still in power, and they are the ones controlling our life to a major extent to this very day. And this is why I put such emphasis on trying to connect these different conspiracies. It's not something I tried to do, it's something that has appeared while I've been looking into them. Because I come onto a crime scene like Farmer Brown, you know, I go on very basic logic. What happened? Who did it? Who benefited? And who was able to pull it off, you know? And it's like with these assassinations, many of them are no-brainers. You don't have to be very intelligent to know if the lone assassin has a revolver with 8 bullets in it and there's 13 bullets fired. You don't have to be super smart to understand that, listen, how the hell did he do that?
Yeah.
Or option 2, was there a second shooter? You know, that it's a no-brainer, and it's the same with these conspiracies. Once you start looking into them, it's not that complicated to see that the official story is an absolute lie,
mm-hmm.
but then to prove and find out what exactly happened. That is really tricky, or it used to be really tricky, because nowadays they're getting really sloppy, low budget, really sloppy, very little planning, and so they're serving us absolute crap, which is perfect for someone like me.
So why do you think then that is? Is it because they realise how dumbed down they've got the general population, that they don't have to cover the tracks, and you know, people just push everything aside? What happened is 9/11 one day, you know, it's gone the next day, except for people like ourselves. Do you think that may be a reason?
I mean, they've been getting away with it for decades, haven't they? And I mean, the thing is that now I feel very, very positive about and optimistic about the future, because there's an immense awakening going on at the moment. People are waking up, you know, just popping up all over the place, because I think most of us have felt that there's something weird going on, something we're not being fed the whole truth, you know, there's strange things going on. What happened to the old Bobby in England, for instance, you know, with the lollipop hat or whatever you call it, you know, and with no guns, and he had a whistle and say, please stop, or whistle again, from that situation. And then just a few years down the line, you got heavily armed with bulletproof vests, with the security cameras everywhere, you know, the airports are like getting into Fort Knox. And what happened? And what happened was these so-called terror acts or assassinations on a high level. And so for me, it's been extremely important to find out what happened with these things that has caused that have made such a massive impact on modern society. Why are we so controlled? Why is there such a so-called need for all this surveillance? Why have our private liberties are being taken away from us on a daily basis? What is going on? And this is what has made me go back to see, where the hell does this start? And this, when you start looking back to it, I mean, we're talking whoa, way back. But what happened during the last 30, 40 years is that they've worked very hard on concentrating the power on fewer and fewer. And so what I found to be this global power elite that is behind, if not all, then, well, in my opinion, I have not been able to find one real terror act, or one bomb explosion, mass shooting, political assassination that has not been cleared by this group. You know, over all of these years, I spent almost 30 years looking into them deeply studying these things. I have not found a real terrorist, because if they're not funded, then they're trained or equipped by the same power.
Well, I'm really happy that you say that, in particular when it comes to one person, because there's a lot of information coming out about Che Guevara. I've got a picture of Che just above the computer here now, and a lot of people say that Che, and I see this in the email that you sent, but saying that Che was he was paid and used, and he was not the person that is portrayed. He isn't this kind of person that went around, believing, etc., trying to do good for the people, and it was all a bit of a show. So the fact that he was taken out by this organisation in a sick sort of way is pleasing to me, because now I know that this man was for real.
Yeah, Che Guevara was, in my opinion, a good guy. It's the good guys that get hit, you know. It's people who stands up for human qualities, for human rights, for peace, for love and understanding. I mean, you go Gandhi, Martin Luther King, JFK to a certain extent, John Lennon, Bob Marley, these people have all been taken out. And the reason why, Lady Diana as well, the reason, because they have stood up and spoke against the military-industrial complex.
Bob Marley? Bob Marley as well.
Bob Marley was also, people think he died of cancer. He did, but how did he die of cancer? Do you know? Would you like me to talk a little
about it? Please.
Okay, yeah. Bob Marley was not just a reggae, you know, yeah, Rastafari man, that gave me some spliff, you know. He did that as well, but not, he was a very intelligent man, I tell you. Do not underestimate Bob Marley, and he became like a real political figure, not only on Jamaica and in Europe and so on. He was very big in Africa as well. He was, check out his girlfriends and stuff in Liberia. He was the boyfriend of the dictator's daughter. And also in, I think it was Said. I'm not sure, I'm almost sure that it was Said as well. He was a massive political figure. And the thing was, all in the States, in Europe, he knew, he got very aware of what was going on. Just like Peter Tosh as well. And they were saying, we need to stop it. You know, we need to stop. There's some madness going on behind the scenes. And this brutal force that is raping the whole world, we need to stand up in like brothers and sisters in love and just not wake up to it and not bend, you know, not hit back, but not bend and just unite. You know, it was like Bob Marley said before he died, I'm a very simple man with a very simple wish. I just want to unite mankind. And I say, wow, wow, wow. And what happened was that he was becoming more and more important as a political figure. There was, I think it was on Jamaica, there was two coalitions, two different parties, and there was almost like a civil war going on. And he made a live concert. And the two people were in the public, in the audience, and he said, please, I invite you up, that political leader, I invite you up. And he got them up on stage, shake hands, all three of them, you know, and the whole, there were like hundreds of thousands of people just, yeah. And, you know, he was really deeply into what became his death very sadly. But how, the way they took him out was that, do you know the former CIA, or he's dead now as well, the CIA, chief of CIA at that time, William Colby. He was also the guy who was, William Colby is deeply involved in everything from building up the whole Stay Behind movement in Europe, the Ghost Army, into also Vietnam War, many of these major crimes and wars that has been going on from the 60s and onwards. Bill Colby was one of the big players. And Bill Colby's son, Peter Colby, was making a documentary. And who was he making a documentary about? Bob Marley. Okay. So he was meeting up with Bob Marley, and he wanted they were discussing this whole thing, and Bob Marley was interested. Yes, of course, no problem. And so Peter Colby said, but I just want to give you first here, here's a gift from us, from the United States. So he gave him a pair of cowboy boots. And Bob, he was really, you know, into he was very physical, you know, training hard, and he liked nice clothes and stuff. So he thought, wow, look at those, they're really cool. He pulled one on. I think it was the right boot. He pulled it on, and inside it there was a little pin that stuck his big toe. You know, he said, "Whoa, fuck, what's this?" He got it off again, and it's, "Oh, I'm really sorry." So they took it out. You know, that big toe was where he got cancer very shortly afterwards. Now you tell me, how many people do you know who got cancer in their big toe and died from it? Mm-hmm. Is it possible to get cancer in a big toe? I never heard about it before, but that was what killed him. And also you can see that not only did he get as far as I believe, I truly believe that was what happened, that this needle was somehow poisoned with some chemical, cancer generating chemical. But then afterwards, when he was sick, he was approached by this doctor, a German doctor. Then when you start checking him out, he's so Nazi, with a Nazi background. And so you got the Rastafari, yeah man, split guy, and you got this Nazi doctor. And what does Nazi stands for? It's not like, yeah, let's embrace the black. I wouldn't say that. It would be the other way around. Let's destroy all kind of minorities. But anyway, this German doctor was so taken care of him, and he sort of moved in, took over the whole treatment of him, got him moved to, I think it was Austria, and it just went from bad to worse, to worse, to worse, and then he died. It could be a massive coincidence, but when you look into these conspiracies, there's like one strange thing, two strange things, okay, I can accept that, four, But when it comes to the hundreds and up to the thousands when you go into 9/11 and so on, it's sort of like you have to be absolutely brain dead to eat the official versions. You have to be very, very, I would say, very stupid.
I agree.
If we go to 9/11, just as an example, you have this plane that is said to have hit the Pentagon. It's a 757. I mean, we're talking a massive plane. It's not like a Cessna or something like that. It is a massive plane, and it comes and it makes a totally impossible turn in the air. You have to be no pilot has ever been able to match that turn they made it in. Then it goes down and it passes above the ground level in a way that is totally impossible to win. It doesn't touch the grass lawn. It knocks down several of these big metal poles that would have knocked the plane into the ground right there. No, they just fall down. Then it hits the Pentagon that had been reinforced just a few weeks or a month before in exactly that spot, making it so that it could handle an impact by a missile. Okay, and then it's said to hit this building where everybody has moved away except for one office, and I'm going to go back to who was working in that office that day, and it hits it, and does it hit it and make a massive big hole? No, this massive plane makes a small hole, very small, that just fits like a missile, and it goes straight through several of these layers of the buildings. I mean, the Pentagon is built up like three, four layers of buildings next to each other inside this pentagram. Anyway, so the official story, I mean, okay, there was a bit of scrap outside, you know, a little piece of metal saying more or less the American Airlines, just
maybe a passport here and there.
Yeah. And what do the people do there, including Donald Rumsfeld? They run out and they start picking up all these pieces of scrap mail. That is evidence, you know. You're not supposed to touch anything. But what they do, because they were so helpful, was to totally clean the whole lawn. And also they come in with tents and move everything away so you don't see anything. Totally illegal to touch a thing like that. But anyway, the official story to this day is that the plane vaporized. It vaporized because of the immense heat. Okay, a whole seven. I mean, come on. It's like, oh God, I get a hemorrhage, you know. It's like, how stupid are we to buy that? And then they say the reason the size of the hole, well, the wings just, what do you call it? They lay down next to the body of the plane and just enter like a long eel or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing, and the two engines, which only 6 tons engine of super material that to melt it, you need like, I don't know how many thousands degrees of Celsius to melt them. And then you look at the hole, okay, maybe that's possible. You look at the hole, and next to the hole, you got one room where the wall has fallen down, and there's a chair with a book lying on the chair. With that incredible heat, wouldn't you think that this book would have burnt, maybe, or something like that? Just a little idea. I tell these things to my 8-year-old daughter, and she's laughing her head off.
Yeah.
Because it's just so bad. She says, can't I make one of these stories up? And I said, I'm sure you could make it better.
Well, you said, you know, earlier that they're getting sloppy, and it's common sense. When the planes hit the Twin Towers, I remember going into work that night, and everyone was asking me, have you seen it? Because it was in the afternoon, and I said, it just didn't look real. It didn't make sense. I said, none of it looked real. It didn't feel right to me at the time. Enough, like you're saying there, with the Pentagon, etc. So many people, like ourselves, thought, that didn't look right, that just didn't, planes, the towers falling the way they did, it just didn't feel right, it didn't look right. But so many people still now will argue with you to the blue in the face and say, "Duck stupid, how could you?" It's incredible, really.
It really is. It is, for me, it's, we're doing it to ourselves. You know, this is the crazy thing. You know, this global elite, they're only a few thousand. We're 9 billion. So it's an absolute joke that we're letting them get away with this. but it's because we're controlling ourselves. How it's done is, I don't know. I really don't know why people are really standing up and fighting against the truth.
It's fighting against, yeah.
It's like, I don't get it. I really do not get it. Can I just say about this Pentagon thing, that, you know, that where it hits, because this is, at least I think, you know, the day before 9/11, on the 10th of September,
yep.
Donald Rumsfeld had a press conference, and he said, welcome to this press conference, I've got some, I would say, quite bad news, they're not good at all. Okay, so what happened was, the Pentagon, we're very, very sorry, but we lost $2.3 trillion.
Yeah.
Do you know how many zeros there is in a trillion? I don't know how many, but it could save Europe or something like that. And they, well, we're really sorry, we don't know, but we're really looking for them. We misplaced them. Okay. $2.3 trillion. And do you know the office that was hit by this so-called plane? Okay. Was that exact office that had all the documents about this missing amount? And the people killed were the people involved in this whole thing. Do you know in the old days when you had pirates and they took a treasure and then the captain took two of the members and they found a little island, dug a big hole, he got them to dig a big hole, like grave size. They went in with the treasure and he boom, boom, shot both of them and then filled the hole. This is how they do it. You know, and this is exactly what happened. And people involved shut them up, kill them, bury them together with the secrets. And also every single time when you look where in the towers where they were hit, you know, what offices were they hit in? Who was allowing it? And so on. So, you know, it's just, it's a massive jigsaw puzzle. I think especially the JFK and 9/11, these are the two so-called masterpieces, if you want to say, on a global scale, where they really put a massive effort into it. But nowadays, these mass shootings, so it's so sloppy. They're not even real events anymore. I know this sounds mind-blowing to many people, but if you start looking into it, I'd be most happy to go into any case you want to talk about. Let me know, I'll tell you about it.
Well, just onto that, just because there's so many questions that are coming to me now as you're speaking. With 9/11, obviously you mentioned the debt, and again, trying to hush that, the whole thing up. Are we not now heading for another false flag operation of some sort because of the world is in such an apparent state that they're making out of debt, you know, the financial burden to everyone. It feels like something has to happen to clear this, be it a world war or something. People talk about, you know, a false flag alien, you know, invasion this year. Would you say in your research now that, yeah, we're due another big one in some way?
They would love to make another big one. But the thing is, there's so many people waking up, so they're not able to pull it off as easily anymore. You know, after the Boston bombing, that one of the search words in Google, false flag operation, it went like this. Like, it went from maybe 4 a day to 400,000 or something. You know, like, people were calling into the TV station, it's another false flag, it's another false flag.
Yeah.
People are waking up big time. So that, and it's very important to understand why they do these. And it's an, if I can just explain a little about the tactics, how they get away with it.
Yeah.
They use a very old Roman tactic called problem, reaction, solution. It's problem, reaction, solution. Normally I give the following example. Like, if, do you know, like in Chile and Argentina and so on, when the military, junta took over, you know, the military took over in the country. They killed the president, they knocked out everybody in parliament and so on. In one night, they could just take the power over a country. Great, they were in the top position and so on. But they had major problems, because after they had taken over the country, they had problems with the population. You know, the population that had elected the former government were not very happy about suddenly having some crazy generals there pointing guns at them. So they started having lots of problems with demonstrations, you know, underground movements, guerrilla movements, sabotage, all of these things. So what they did was they hit the people that they knew could be, who were enemies or to come, to become enemies. And some of the first ones they take out are you know, artists, you know, like writers, authors, poets, singers, all of these painters that can, because these can really get the feeling of the people going. So they take them out, and then all kind of political enemies, all of these. So they made lots of mass arrests. They filled the jails, and then they thought, oh my God, the jails are full, we have to kill some people. So they started mass executing everybody they want to get rid of. But for everyone they killed, there was a family. There were brothers, there were sisters, there were children, you know, and friends. So they had, so that started, you know, a movement. More people got very upset with them. So they had to arrest them as well, and them, and more and more. And then they had to start torturing all of them to try and tell, but where are the rest, where are they hiding? So you had mass killings, you had torture, you had all of these things, and you almost needed as many soldiers in the streets as there were normal people. Messy. Very messy. Mm. Not the way to go. So, nowadays, they learn from the old Romans. And what they've done is, for instance, if I, let me say, you pick a country. Say, just a country.
Italy.
Italy. Mm-hmm. I'm the president of Italy. Okay, so I want the tanks in the streets. I want the police to be able to walk around with bazookas, you know, with totally unlimited power, that they can do whatever they want to, whoever, kick in doors, mass arrest, detain people for unlimited time with no you know, no right to a lawyer and so on. How would I do that? You know, because that is what they're aiming for, to have a totally totalitarian state where the army is controlling us and the police as well. So how would I do a thing like that and get away with it? If I just forced it upon the country, I would, like I said, I would have a massive problem with the population. I would have maybe financial boycotts from other countries. I would have, you know, diplomatic difficulties with other countries also saying, what the hell are you up to? You know, so that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is that I secretly place a bomb. Nowadays, it's bombs or mass shooting. These are the trend of the moment. Okay, so I secretly place a bomb, and it's very important where I place it. I place it in a place, it has to be a public place. It's no good out in the countryside or in an old people home or something like that. No, no, no. Women and children, that's the key word. It needs to get the maximum emotional impact from the population, because that is what I'm looking for. So I would place it where daycare centers, train stations, they will all the time you will see that women and children are very central in this. Okay. So I do that. I secretly prepare for a bomb there. At the same time, I start preparing a patsy as well.
Mm-hmm.
This patsy can be one person or it can be a group. And if it's a group, then often I leak out in media the weeks upcoming to the bomb, I start leaking out. Let's say, for instance, Italy, the Roman Catholics. Okay, just as an example, I use the Roman Catholics. I say that the Roman Catholics, they have meetings on Sundays, and they're following this guy with a strange hat on his head, and he's got a big spear next to him, and if he says, come here on Tuesday, they will follow his word, and they will come. It's a very secret sect, and maybe they have even hidden guns under the church and stuff. It's just an example. It could be the Mormons, it could be yogis, it could be bird lovers, it could be dog lovers, it could be like the military car mechanics. You make up, you know, it's like they just make up whatever. But this little group, that they would start painting black so that in the subconscious of the people, they would say, oh, that's so weird. So you prepare the mentality. So or at the same time, prepare evidence that would point at that group right away. As soon as the bomb explodes, boom, it would point to that group. And this is often done so clumsily. It's so obvious. Do you know, like if there was the Roman Catholic, maybe they would take the Pope's hat or something like that and put in the rubble where, you know, something so, so pointing like that. Okay, so I got the patsy prepared. I got the evidence prepared. the bomb is in place. And what I also need, I need my own investigation on standby with only people that I control. And these people, as soon as the bomb explodes, they will move in, starting to investigate the whole thing. They will push all kind of normal, intelligent, honest policemen, detectives, examiners, they will be pushed aside, and my investigation will just push in like this. Okay. Then at the same time, what I do as well is I arrange for a drill. Nowadays, there's almost always a drill going on at the exact same time. And that drill is identical to the live event. And the reason why they do that is they use that drill to be able to place the bomb.
Get preparation.
To get the scapegoats, the patsy in place, you know, manipulate like with the London bombers and so on. Get them in position where they look like the guilty part, you know. And also, you can do everything undercover with this drill. Because it's like in the middle of this drill, suddenly it goes live, and half the people involved have absolutely no idea that it's suddenly live, that it's actually happening. They still believe that it's just a drill. Anyway, so what I do now, everything is set up, and then I need to pick the time, and the time for this is almost always around 9 o'clock in the morning, because that's when people are most vulnerable. It's no good if they're still asleep. They need to wake up, but not really be awake. So one coffee, okay, 8:15, let's wait a bit more, you know, read the newspaper on the way to work. Yeah, that's when to hit, because we're back to the emotional impact. So early morning, and boom, it goes, bomb off, all of these awful images of innocent people being blown to pieces is just spread out in media that I control to a large extent as well. Mm-hmm. Not saying that all the journalists are aware of it, but through the ownership and through the different channels and my control of the editors and so on, I can just shape what will come out. So they have been on standby, boom, the bomb goes up, and out comes all these awful, awful images of blood and things. And right away, the reporter, within minutes, will start talking about the patsy. How they know that it's a very good clue. They will start, oh my God, it's this strange group, it's that strange patsy, it's this one that we've been telling you about, leaking about for weeks. And so the whole thing culminates in the reaction from people just saying, oh my God, something needs to be done. And they turn towards me. That is the reaction I want. Because they're not aware I placed the bomb. The reaction I wanted, something needs to be done, and they turn towards me, who they elected to do these crisis situations, to deal with them. And I say, well, I can do that, but the only way to deal with a dangerous group like the car mechanics or the Roman Church or the green bird lovers or whatever, is to put tanks in the streets, to have the police have unlimited power, to have all of this. And people, yes, do it. So I suddenly, instead of being a terrorist, I am a hero, getting all the tanks in the street, knocking people right, left and center, kicking in normal people's doors, and just on the, now they're using martial law as well, they're testing it out to see if how much they're able to get away with, you know, without people reacting. So they start to put martial law as well. And they just push the whole thing forward, they knock out the patsy, that group, because I was annoyed with that one anyway, often, most of the time. And then I solve the problem, the patsy is killed or put away, and then after a few weeks, I let the military power stay there, so that people get used to see the streets, because they're there for your protection. You know? And then, after a couple of weeks, I pull back. But I only pull back 80%. I leave some of, you know, more guards, more armed policemen in the streets, more surveillance camera, more, like the liberties of the population will be taken away. And it's all for your protection.
Yeah.
This is standard procedure. And this is what you can see many of the times with these so-called terror acts or assassinations on a high level, it's not what is being done often after it happens, but it's what is not being done. It's like there's this hidden hand in the background manipulating, you know,
so
this unseen hand.
So, Ali, so you're, this unseen hand, this is what we're coming to here. I mean, people say the Illuminati, there's a new world order, you know, there's this group, and it's a secret society, as you're saying. Who is it that is doing it? Who are these secret societies? I mean, have you got any idea, or is it still, again, just a nefarious group with faces, no names?
No, God, loads of names. Loads of names. I've got hundreds of names. on my website, lightandconspiracies.com, I got my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion. That's lightandconspiracies.com, coup d'etat in slow motion. And also on my website, I'm adding more and more information. What I've done, I've made a research, it's like a power pyramid, and I've come to quite a high level in this pyramid. I'm not at the top. Whatever is in the top, I don't know, some people say the Jesuits, some people say the Illuminati, these things, I do not know. I mean, this is such a massive area to investigate. So I leave that area to other people who are more passionate about finding out that and who's more in expertise doing that one. But I've come to a level where for sure I know that these groups, there are three groups, and I know these groups are dead in when it comes to these things. And it's the Trilateral Commission, got their own website. The Council on Foreign Relations, they've got their own website. And the Bilderberg Group. The Bilderberg Group, also in the end of my book, I've got like almost 200 pages just with all the members since 1954 and onwards. All the meetings and whatever agenda that has leaked out from every year. Because once you start looking, many of the members of these groups are members in more than one, many of the members in two or three of them. And this is also very integrated with Freemasonry and other secret societies, and so it's a very strange world to get into. But the members of these groups are key to what is going on. I'm not talking about that just you get invited to one of these meetings as a newcomer, that you really know what's going on. But at the steering committee level and some of the steady guests that have been there for years and years, these people are super aware of what's going on. And I would say, do not trust them. They have their loyalty somewhere totally different. And these are people like David Cameron, Gordon Brown, Margaret Thatcher was also part of this, Tony Blair, big time when it comes to in the UK part. You got George Bush, the whole Bush family is just they're involved in criminality on a scale that would blow your mind once you start getting into it. It's incredible what the Bush family is involved with. But you got the JP Morgan, you got Rockefellers, you got the Rothschild. The Rothschilds are super, super central in this as well. And so on. Nowadays, there's a lot of information about the Bilderberg Group that is out there. And if I can just describe another tactic they have.
Can I just say, like, sorry, but just before you continue, get a bit of fuzz that's coming through here, so I just make you aware of that, but everything's still recording fine. Sorry, as you say.
No, it's not only the problem reaction solution thing that they're using. Regarding the problem reaction solution, one of the things at the moment are mass shootings. And the reason why they arrange these mass shootings is to try to disarm the population, especially in the States. That's why it's happening over there. And they try to make it problem, that's the mass shooting. Reaction for the population to say, oh my God, something needs to be done. And then I come with a solution is hand over your weapons, give up your weapons, and the result afterwards is that then I can much more easily take over your country, because they're really, really going for the States at the moment. It's rape and plunder, that's the...
Are they nearing their end game now of mass control? It appears to me that they are. You said that people are waking up, and I agree that people are waking up. people are waking up but not being active, they're not doing anything, like you're working, you're researching, you know, description, website, etc. I don't see anybody apart from the same groups, the ones we're involved with at Critical Mass Radio, etc., doing stuff, but it seems to be a lot of people waking up but not actually doing anything. So to me, that's their end game is proceeding, really.
The thing is, we are in a very critical point, you know. Mm-hmm. Either we're screwed, or we're entering a beautiful new world when they stop, because if they stop messing this place up, because these people are involved on all areas of life at the moment. They've infiltrated, I think, more or less everywhere. You know, food, music, military, politics,
vaccines.
You name it. They're media, they're there. Film industry, they are there. They're the ones controlling us, bombarding us. So many people say, lie down and die, because we're screwed anyway. I say I'm super optimistic, because this is the best time ever to be alive. I think 2013 and onwards, it's like the dark and the light forces have been racing, and now it's like light. When you turn on light inside a room, there's no fighting with this. It's not like the light bulb is struggling with the shadows, you know, and there's a massive fight before there's lighting up. It's a matter of frequency, and the love is the highest frequency of all, and fear is the lowest. And the higher frequency always wins. If you put them together in a laboratory, the higher frequency, it just annuls the lower one. And it's the same with love and fear. And this is, I would say, they are very aware of these things. It sounds very new agey, but it's very real, I tell you. And that is one of the reasons why they're trying to push us down, to keep us fearful all the time, is because then they can control us, because they are on a higher frequency. But if you fill yourself with gratitude and love and passion and all of these good feelings, you lift yourself. And when you lift yourself, by one of the best ways to lift yourself is by helping people. You know, there are loads of people who need a helping hand. You help someone, you feel better. They feel better. Somebody who sees you help someone else, they feel better. And when you start lifting up, then your head starts clearing up as well, because you're not so scattered inside of all of this fear. And also depression is also, if you're not aware of it, depression is because you're too egocentric. It's me, poor me. That results in a depression. So the best way to get out of depression, reach out, give a helping hand. Do not clean your neighbor's garden without them knowing it. Help the old guy. You know, help. Just help. And that makes you feel stronger. When you feel stronger, you can do more. When you do more, and the more positive you are, you know, you need to be positive. This is also one thing in this conspiracy world. People are doom and gloom, and it's like, oh my
fantastic.
God, who can take it in? It's so, I mean, I've been in this for 30 years. I mean, God, I've had enough of darkness and death and destruction. It's enough. My mind is, I can't take it anymore. You know, and this is what they're trying to push us on us, saying, it's over, you don't have a chance, it's the world is going on, the nature is dying, the finances are dying, you are dying, absolutely not. You wake up, and suddenly you start seeing clearer, and you become stronger. And when you become stronger, you start to be able to stand up, wake up, stand up, in truth, in transparency, and take responsibility for your world. It is your world, it's our kids, it's for us. It's like a massive bully in a schoolyard, you know, who's just terrorizing the neighbor, and we're letting them get away with it. But it's the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, when they come to the castle, and there's this really scary voice trying to say, whoa, we are powerful and you are weak. Feel fear. This is how they're controlling us, through media and all these things. Not letting us understand how powerful we are once we start waking up. And then if we stand up without bending, I'm not saying hit back, I'm absolutely not saying hit back, because do hit back, fight for peace, as they say, absolute crap. Peace for peace, you know. Be peace. That's the way to do it. Do not hit back, because then you're just playing their game and they will win. They've got the muscles on that plane. You know? So we need to do it in a different way. We need to go the Gandhi way, the Martin Luther King way, these ways. And there's so many beautiful examples nowadays with, you know, this marriage in heaven, mobile phones and YouTube. I love it. You know, the camera on cell phones and YouTube. These two, what a power, a tool of liberty, you know. Because once you start filming it, it neutralizes them. So it's very important for people to inform themselves about their rights, because there's so many atrocities going on when it comes to civil liberties, you know. So that when people in uniform approach you, you know your rights. You know, do I really have to identify myself? Do I really need to step out of the car? Do I really need, and just, you know, stand in the truth. Like, there was this amazing woman in Arizona who stopped at a roadblock. I don't know if you saw that. Mm-hmm. Her husband was filming it. And there was this guy who, it was an illegal roadblock. You know, they're like a border control. But there's no border there. They just put it there. And they say because of the illegal immigration. Yeah, right. Okay. So this young guy, who I think he had just been unemployed, and now he got this beautiful, nice uniform and a gun and a big star. He felt, whoa, I'm a big guy. And he stops this car. They're filming, and he says, please, ma'am, could you please step out? We need to search your car. And she said, I'm an American citizen. I will not step out. You are not allowed to search my car. And he gets really confused and says, but ma'am, can you please step out of your car? We need to search it. No, I am an American citizen. I will not allow you to search my car. You have no right to do that. We are on American soil. There's no need. You can search around the car. You can bring a dog. I'm not stepping out. I'm not moving your car. This goes on because also the key words is, she says, am I detained or am I free to go? These are key words legally. Am I detained or am I free to go? She keeps repeating them, and he says, well, you're detained. And she says, on what grounds? And he says, the amendments. She says, the amendments of what? You have no legal right to detain me. So am I detained or am I free to go? So he gets really like, he doesn't know what to do. So he calls for his superior officer. So he comes, and in the end, there's three different, this woman stands her ground. I mean, my God, I love her. He stands her ground, and in the end, there's this guy with sunglasses, and he's just shouting at her. So she puts on her sunglasses because he's spitting, you know. And in the end, she just stands her ground, not violent, not aggressive, not just, I am an American citizen. You have no rights to search my car. I will not let you search my car. And in the end, this captain, he screams, and he's all sore throat and things like that. And he just said, but why the hell were you stopped anyway? She said, I don't know. They did it. So he said, why did you stop her? Well, you told us to. He said, so the captain just, for God's sake, and he just let her drive off. What a battle. Mm-hmm. What a symbolic battle. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. No fighting, just standing up for your rights and your truth. Because the people in power now, the power elite I'm talking about, they're criminal. They're criminals on a scale that, when you start looking into it, it's like your mind just feels like exploding. It is incredible. And these are people that look very nice on TV and nice suits and so on, but when you look at their actions behind the scenes, super criminal.
Okay. What I want to sort of talk to you about there, because it's so good at last that there's people with your knowledge and as you say, been doing this for 30 years, who are not peddling fear to sell a book or to make themselves a bit more notorious and famous when it comes in the truth movement, which you actually, the opposite, which is fantastic, the last 10 minutes of what you've been saying. There are a couple of people that I'd like to just ask you about with regards to people that have been taken out, if you like, that have been assassinated. Well, there's one in particular, you nearly touched on it before, but Bruce Lee is something that I've been having conversations with a few people recently, and they're suggesting another one who was very active, very intelligent person who did a lot for people. He's saying that he was assassinated as well. I mean, did you have any sort of information on that along the way?
I looked into it, but not deeply enough. I'm not the right one to say anything. I only talk about things I know.
That's fantastic. Okay. So we've gone to, as we said...
It is important, though, to know that Bruce Lee's son was killed as well.
This is what the conversation was with regards to, and it is very interesting there. The UFO, don't say phenomenon, but this is becoming more and more apparent now. There's so many people coming forward that the odd stories that you used to get in the 70s and 80s when people were dismissed, there's so many people doing it now that obviously they're not just doing it for money or for some kind of fame. This group again, is this something you believe in, or is this something that is being tried to be hushed up?
Are we talking about UFOs now?
Yes, sorry, yeah.
Once again, this is an area that I've kept away from it because I felt that it's very important for me to have credibility.
Yeah.
So I only stay in my areas,
mm-hmm.
and I know areas like UFOs, like reptilian race, mm-hmm. these type of things. As soon as you start even mentioning it, on goes the tinfoil hat.
Sure.
People lose their interest. And so I leave these areas. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying I do not know. I have no idea. There might be reptilians. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs, no idea once again. So I leave that to people who with a lot more knowledge. And
so can you talk more about Princess Diana at all?
Yeah, that was a clear, cold-hearted murder. Very, very. They did it in a brutal way. Brutal way. And the reason why she was taken out was not because, in my opinion, my humble opinion, not because of an Arab baby or anything like that. The reason she was taken out was that she was starting big time to speak out against landmines.
Right, yeah.
And landmines, why are landmines so important? People think, oh, it's something that explodes when you want to stop a truck. No. What they used it for is that they start a war on some innocent country. I tell you, these countries, more or less all of them, are more or less innocent. But they have oil or drugs or they're in a strategic position. These are the three key: oil, drugs, and strategic position.
Yep.
These are some of the main reasons. And especially in poor countries or countries like Afghanistan, where you've got the whole opium trade, or in Southeast Asia and so on. What they've done in areas that was interesting to them, they invaded them in the search of Bin Laden or someone else, you know, who wasn't even Afghan. It's just, they make up a reason and they call it some fancy name like Operation Stardust or Operation Superman or something like that. So that people will say, oh, it's okay that we go and kick the shit out of these innocent people. So they go there, and what they do is they search for this missing person, whoever it is, the boogeyman they're looking for, in very specific areas. Minerals, oils, drugs, these are the key things. And what they need to, before they can get on with their whole business, they need to get rid of the local population. So what they do is they spread the whole area with landmines, and then they put like dolls, these are mines as well, toys and stuff like that, looking like mines, so that the local population's kids come and say, oh, look at this beautiful doll, pick it up, boom, gets blown to pieces. This is a perfect way to scare the local population away from that area. And nowadays, I'm very, very ashamed to say that one of the main manufacturers of landmines is Sweden, of all countries, a so-called neutral country.
Mm-hmm.
Shame on you. That is what I'm saying. Shame on you. And they make them not from metal so that you can find them, but from different composite materials so that they're almost impossible if you haven't got a map showing exactly where they are. So it will take the population like 20, 30 years to clear an area like that. And in the meantime, they can get away with it. They make airstrips, flying in massive amounts of drugs, and, well, normally it's drugs. Or they refill the planes when they go to the next country and bomb the shit out of them because of drugs, oil, weapons.
Fascinating.
Well, it's the same story again. So can I just, if I go back to Lady Diana?
Sure.
If you want to know how she was taken out.
Yeah, please. Please, please.
I don't know all of the details. It's been a while since I looked into it, but in the tunnel itself, there was one white Fiat and there was one motorbike with two people on it. And when they entered the tunnel, I mean, the paparazzi, absolutely innocent. They had nothing to do with them, and they were far, far behind the car. So, but this tunnel is famous to take out people in, you know. It's almost like they left it like an assassination place. There's been many, many death accidents. And the reason why is that the pillars in the middle are not round or anything. They're absolutely flat and 90 degrees towards the traffic. I mean, who come up with an idea like that? If you don't put up the, I don't know what these are called in English, you know, these things that you bounce off from. Barriers,
yep.
You know, like the bouncing of barriers for cars. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Next to the highways. Yeah. Okay, there's nothing like that. So, at least at that time there was nothing. So these pillars were just standing like this, waiting for somebody to lose concentration and just smash right into them. And also on top of this, it's very important that many of these people are taking out in specific locations with major Freemasonry background. There's often an obelisk or an eternal flame or some kind of symbolism around that area, or it used to be a place where people got executed. I don't know what they're into, such weird rituals, these groups. I don't understand the mentality at all. But anyway, this, you've got the eternal flame on top of this Alma tunnel. And so when they came down, there's an entry road coming right before the tunnel from the right hand side. That's where this white Fiat was standing. And then when they were coming into the tunnel, this white Fiat started trying to hit them, and that is also why there was some paint that was scraped off on one of the fenders. But so they were struggling a little bit with their Fiat, and at the same time the motorbike with these two people had overtaken the Mercedes where Lady Diana was in, and the guy on the back turned around, and he had a military size, I don't know the technical term for it, but it's like a strobe light. It's like incredibly powerful light that totally blinds you for like up to 15 seconds. So he hit one of those off, and you can also hear witnesses, some of the first witnesses said they saw this amazing flashlight coming out of the tunnel. And that made the driver lose control and just hammered right into one of these pillars. Okay, so what happened was, also back to the witnesses, they said the motorbike stopped, the guy jumped off, and he ran up to the driver's door, opened it, and injected something in the neck of the driver. You can also see on the autopsy result that the driver, if the result was natural, he wouldn't have been able to walk. He was so intoxicated and with CO2 in the blood, he wouldn't have been able to breathe hardly. But this is, in my opinion, due to this injection he got in his neck. But Lady Diana was not deadly wounded. This is the tragic thing. She had internal bleedings, but she was absolutely not dead in any way. So here comes my question to you. How long do you think, I mean, we're only talking about one of the most famous people in the world. You would think that people would do their best to sort of speed things up.
Sure.
How long do you think it took from the accident until she came to the hospital? Do you think you would drive her to the nearest hospital just for fun? Or, you know, like, would that be a logical place
You do what you could as quick as you could and obviously try and help her, yeah.
Thank you. That is my thinking. What happened was it was delayed. Then came the ambulance, they put her in the ambulance, and then the ambulance passed the nearest hospital and went to another hospital, I think it was 6 kilometers down the road. And outside the hospital, the ambulance stopped for about 5 minutes, and they say because they were giving her extra special treatment. Normal way is the ambulance drives like mad to the hospital because that's where they've got all the equipment, all the best doctors, all of these things. No, here, it stopped. And it took, as far as I remember right, 43 minutes from the accident until she came to the hospital. And who was at the hospital? the head of the MI6 and the French Secret Service and so on, waiting. But what happened in the ambulance was that they were waiting for her to bleed to death. This is so tragic when you say, I mean, it's awful, awful. They were waiting for her to die so that when they came to the emergency, it was too late to save her.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, come on, how cruel is that?
Mm-hmm.
It, oh God, I just the thought of it. And we have the same with the Swedish foreign minister, Anna Lindh, who stabbed. The same there. How it was, first she was okay, and then complications. There are always these complications in these cases. They're starting to survive, and then complications happen. They're allergic to the medicine, or moved to a different hospital, and then they die there. And the hospital they're moved to is almost always less equipped for that type of injury. It goes against normal logic. That's what I'm saying. With these things, just look at it with an open mind, you know? Look at it with an open mind, see if it was you or I who had done this. If you place a bomb here, for instance, then the bomb, everything would be blown out from the center of where the bomb was placed. But in these cases, when they're doing it with a patsy thing, a bomb can be placed over in the left corner, and then the blast conviction, and often it's more than one blast and so on. You know, it's just Farmer Brown logic. Look at it. You know, the bomb is outside a window. How come the glass is blown out of the building when the bomb was on the outside? The glass should be blown in. It's this type of normal Farmer Brown 1 + 1 = 2 logic that I've done all of these many years of research. It's just like the truth is simple. It's lying that is complicated. And the more people who get involved in a lie, the more lies, the more complicated it is to keep the lid on. So this is great for someone like me, because with lots of people involved, loads of lies, and they just, you know, it's wonderful, because it's like the subconscious, it's like almost spitting them out. You see Dick Cheney and these other people, and they talk about the Pentagon, well, the missile that hit, I mean the plane that hit, it's like, thank you, I heard that one, and especially since it was filmed, so I can reverse it, the missile that hit, over the plane that hit, you know. It's no brainers in any of these things.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to be super, but you have to be very asleep and incredibly, I don't know what, but to start standing up and defending these official lies. That these people that criticize people that are looking into these things. Also, one thing that I want to say is that the word conspiracy, ever since the Kennedy assassination, the word conspiracy has been connected on purpose with the name or the word theory. You know, you say conspiracy, people right away in their head say theory. I'm not talking about conspiracy theories. I've heard loads of conspiracy theories. I'm not interested. I am interested in facts. Facts, facts. Who did it? Who had the possibility to do it and get away with it? Who gained, and why was it done? You know, these are the simple questions and the most hard to ask answer. But as soon as you say it out, and that is why it's been pumped there, so there's every time somebody says, but listen, this actually happened. No, it's just another conspiracy theory. Okay. Okay, so the plane actually vaporized? Is that what you're saying? These two towers, they turn into dust? How did that happen? It's just normal logic. You're equipped with this brain between your ears to use it. And I'm saying now is a good time.
Brilliant. I agree. Okay, but just before we finish, can you just tell us the name of your site again, please, so everyone can go and check you out?
It's www.lightonconspiracies.com, and my book, where I connect many of these, it's mostly aimed at the Olof Palme, the Swedish Prime Minister, that assassination, but in the end I'm connecting it with many of these other big international hits, because in the book I track down even the hit team that has been active since the early 60s all the way up until today. They're in the late 70s, some, and still active, some of these people, if not themselves, then educating you. So,
okay, well, what I'll say, Ollie, is absolutely fascinating to listen to you there. Sorry.
Can I just finish with one more thing? I know I'm talking a lot today.
No, it's okay.
That's the reason why I'm here.
Yep.
I am not a man of violence. I am not a man of revenge. I'm not a man of hatred. If what I say come out like that, then please think again. What I'm saying is transparency, truth, compassion, forgiveness. These are the feelings that can move us forward. If we do what is called a revolution, listen to the word revolution. It means doing it again. If we do, check out any revolution in history, more or less, you will see that the people that took over by a violent revolution became worse than the people that was in power before. That is not the way to do it. The way to do it is stand in peace, know your right, and in truth, do not bend, but stand in truth. Stand up and wake up. And people in uniform, it's especially you who have to wake up, because what you're doing, it is not okay. Terrorizing, which is what you're doing now, your own population, it is not okay. There's no honor, there's no anything in that. It is absolutely wrong what you're doing. So please educate yourself. Find out whose agenda you're serving. The same goes for soldiers that are sent abroad. It's super tragic what is going on. That you are sent there, I'm not talking to people in uniform, you are sent there as brutal enforcers and just the lead of banksters that could not care less, that is just totally ruining this beautiful world. So please wake up. You're the ones who have to live with your actions. You're the ones who have to live with the memories of innocent people that you blow away because somebody else is giving you the order. Wake up, I ask, I beg you, wake up, inform yourself, find out what's going on. Even if they call it Operation Freedom and you're sent to some foreign country to liberate it, you have my word of honor. You are there to kick ass so that they can get away with smuggling drugs and oil and death. It's totally violent. I mean, it's awful what's going on, and you are just an empty uniform. They could not care less about you. As soon as you're not of use to them, you're out. Look in the States. I mean, I don't know, 50% of the homeless are war veterans or something like that. Crazy. And so many of these people, poor people, who have soiled their souls because of other people's greed, are committing suicides in the thousands. It's time to wake up. It is time.
Brilliant. That's a fantastic way to end, and I totally agree with everything you're saying. Again, Ollie, just thank you for your time today, and all the research that you're doing, and you know, we'll get a chance to speak again soon.
Anytime. Listen, anytime. And that goes to any other shows, articles, whatever it takes, I'm right there. And if anyone, I'm really looking to lift this to the next level and make a documentary, because people nowadays, it's a lot more, it's easier to get informed by visuals. And I'm really, really looking to make a top quality documentary showing all the links, what has been going on since the early 60s and all the way up until today, how it's all connected by the same group, by the same people involved, and all of it to dupe us.
Yeah. Fantastic. Good luck with that. Again, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Very nice chap. Thank you for that, Ollie.
The pleasure is mine.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
See you.